Osho, Tao, the Three Treasures, Volume 1, Talks on Fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 8.
The first question. You have said much lately about inner silence and emptiness. After 2 years as your disciple, much of the time, particularly during the meditations at the ashram, my mind seems more than ever to be out of control and working like a computer gone mad. I try to be a witness to the whole absurdity, but the monster goes on and on. Let the monster go on, and you don't be worried. The very worry is the problem, not the monster. The whole world is going on, rivers go on flowing, clouds go on moving in the sky, words go on chatting in the trees. Just why you are so against only with the mind? Let it also go on. You be unconcerned. Witnessing is not an effort. When you are unconcerned, the witness arises. Be indifferent to it. In the climate of indifference, the witness arises. The very idea that you have to stop it is wrong. That you have to still it is wrong. That you have to do something about this constant ongoing process of the mind is wrong. You are not required to do anything. If you do anything, that won't help. That will help the trouble, not you. That's why when you meditate, you feel the mind going more mad. When you don't meditate, it is not so mad. When you are meditating, you are too much concerned, trying your heart to make it still. Who are you? And why you should be worried about the mind? What is wrong in it? Let them thoughts, let them move like clouds. When you are indifferent, suddenly you are watching. Nothing left to do, what you will do? You can only watch. You can only witness. And in witnessing, mind stops. Not that you can stop it. Nobody has ever been able to stop the mind. Because the stopper is also part of the mind. The idea of meditation is also part of the mind. The idea that if you become silent, you will attain to the ultimate is also of the mind. So don't be stupid. The mind cannot silence the mind. Who is asking this question? You or the mind? You are not aware of yourself at all. It is the mind playing tricks. The only thing that can be done and that which is possible is to be indifferent and let the mind go. When you are indifferent, suddenly a distance arises between you and the mind. You still listen to it because it is knocking continuously at your doors. But now you are indifferent. Now inside you are not worried whether it goes on or stops. You don't choose. You say to the mind, whether you want to go, you go on. If you want to stop, you can stop. It is none of my concern. This unconcern is needed. In this climate of unconcern and indifference, the witness arises. Suddenly you see that the mind never belonged to you. It is a computer. It is a mechanism. You are absolutely separate from it. Drop all efforts to still it. And just remain passive, looking whatsoever is going on. You don't give direction to the mind. You don't say, be like this. Don't be a guide to the mind and don't be a controller. The whole existence is going on. Nothing disturbs you. Only why this mind, a small computer, a small mechanism? Enjoy it if you can. If you cannot, then be indifferent. And then suddenly one day you find that somebody who was fast asleep within you is awakening. A new energy is coming in you, a distance from the mind. And then by and by the mind goes on far away, far away, far away. Then still it goes on chatting, but you know that somewhere far away near a star it is chattering. You cannot even make sense out of it, what it is saying. And this distance goes on and on and on. And one day suddenly you cannot find where the mind has gone. This silence is qualitatively different than a silence that you can practice. The real silence comes spontaneously. It is not something to be practiced. If you practice it, you can create a false silence also. Mind is so tricky, it can give you a false notion of silence. And that too will belong to the mind. So don't try hard to still it. Rather, stand aside by the side of the road and let the traffic pass. Just watch it. Just look at it with eyes of unconcern. Indifference. And the thing that you have been desiring will happen, but not through desire. Because desire will not allow you to be indifferent. Buddha has used the word upeksha. The word means absolute indifference. And he says, you can never become meditative unless you have attained to upeksha, to indifference. That is the very soil. In that soil, the seeds of meditation sprout, and there is no other way. Second question. Since thousands of years, enlightened masters have been helping their disciples to use words less and silence more. Laos talked the least, but you seem to be the person who has talked more than anyone else on the earth. Why is it so? They tried and they failed with you. So I thought, let me try the other way around. Third question. It is said that all the knowledge of heaven and earth is contained in the 64 hexagrams of the I Ching. Is this so? If so, how to utilize it? All the knowledge of heaven and earth is contained in everything, not only in the 64 hexagrams of I Ching. Even in a small people on the path, all the knowledge of heaven and earth is contained. in a small blade of grass, all the knowledge of heaven and earth is contained. In everything, because every part of existence carries the whole in it. Even a drop of sea is the whole sea, the whole knowledge, the whole being of the sea is contained in the drop. It is sea. It may not be the sea, but it is sea. You also contain the whole. So no need to go to I Ching and the hexagrams. Rather go inwards. Because finally, I Ching cannot say to you anything. Finally, you will be the interpreter. If you read tarot cards, or I Ching, or there are other methods, who will interpret? You will be the interpreter. So finally everything depends on you. Unless you are awakened, no I Ching is going to help. And if you are awakened, everything is a hexagram and everything is I Ching. So don't waste your time with other things. Become awakened. When you are awakened, you will see the whole universe written everywhere. In each blade of grass, you will find the signature of the divine. And if you can understand the blade of grass, you have understood all, root and all. So don't be deceiving yourself. People deceive themselves in millions of ways. They waste their time in millions of ways, hoping somehow that they can enter into the temple from some back door. There exists none. There is no back door to the temple, only the front door. You will find many back doors, but they will not lead you to the inner shrine. You will be caught by some charlatan or somebody else. Back doors don't exist in existence, because existence does not believe in hiding. Look. Everything is so open, the secret is so open. Nothing is hidden. Everything is open. Only you need eyes to see it, awareness to read it, ability to enjoy it. Everywhere. Everything is an open secret. Nothing whatsoever is hidden from the very beginning. Existence is open. Only you are closed. Then a closed mind is working with I Ching. What you will attain out of it? Your own reflections. You will see yourself in it. Your own unconscious will be reflected in it. These methods are just mirrors. They reflect your own unconscious. Nothing much. They never give you anything new. They simply reflect you. But you don't know yourself. That's why you think something new has been gained, some new knowledge has been gained through them. I have heard the Russian dictator Khrushchev had come to Paris, and then he went to see a modern exhibition of paintings. He was an uncultured man, and not in any way aesthetic, had no sense of beauty. In fact, vulgar. But he was invited and he had to go, and great painters were shown in the exhibition. He looked at one painting and he said, "I don't understand. This looks ugly." The man who was showing him, a great critic of art, he said, "This is Picasso, and it is one of the most beautiful things that has happened in this century. But it needs understanding. It is not so ordinary that anybody can understand it. You have to raise your level of aesthetic feeling, sensitivity. Only then you will be able to see what it is." They moved. Khrushchev didn't feel good. He never had imagined. In fact, in Russia it would have never happened. No critic, no artist would have been so courageous to say that you lack understanding. Then at the next painting he stood for a few minutes, looked deeply and said, "I think this too is Picasso." The critic said, "Sorry sir, this is just a mirror. You are looking yourself in it." But he was an ugly man. It may have looked him like Picasso, a painting of Picasso, a distortion. In I Ching you will find a mirror. If a Buddha reads I Ching, it is going to be totally different, because the mirror will show Buddha. If Lao Tse reads I Ching, it will show Lao Tse. If you read, of course, you will see Khrushchev. You can see only your face. So don't be bothered. Become a Buddha. Then it will be worth looking at the mirror. But no Buddha bothers to look at the mirror. This is the puzzle. No Buddha bothers to look in a mirror because he knows deep down his own being so much, so intensely, that there is no need for a mirror to know it. You need mirror, but then the mirror simply shows you. And you go on befooling with yourself. Whatsoever you want to read, you will read. And you will throw the responsibility on I Ching. Once Mullah Nasruddin didn't go to the office. In the evening he came to see me and he was very happy because he slept the whole day in the bed. Not a care in the world. I asked Nasruddin, "Why you have taken a holiday today?" He said, "Couldn't help. Because I tossed a coin in the morning, whether to go to the office or not. If it comes heads, I have to go. If it comes tails, I can enjoy a holiday." So I asked, "It came tails and you enjoy the holiday?" He said, "Yes, but I had to toss it 10 times. Then it came to tails." This is what is happening. I Ching, tarot cards, whatsoever. This is what is happening. Whatsoever you want to do, you do it. But why throw responsibility on poor I Ching. Just be responsible and do it. These are tricks. Yes, I say everything is contained in everything, even in I Ching. The whole universe is contained. Because nothing otherwise is possible. This is how existence is. In each part, the total is contained. The whole is contained. Anywhere you move into the whole. But it depends on your understanding, how you will read it. So I am not concerned with I Chings. I am concerned with you and your understanding. Try to grow into it. Don't waste your time with anything else. Life is really short, and much has to be done. Don't fool around. The fourth question, do growth and spirituality have any meaning in Tao? None whatsoever. Because Tao is whatsoever is the case right now. Tao is the present. Growth brings future in. The very idea of growth brings the future in, and then everything is distorted. Not that you don't grow in Tao, in fact you only grow in Tao, but the idea of growth is completely foreign to the world of Tao. They don't talk of growth, they only talk how to be, not how to grow. And if you know how to be, that is the only way to grow. If you know how to be in this moment, you are on the path of growth. You need not think about it. It comes by itself on its own accord. Just as like a river finds its way to the sea, without consulting any guidebook, without asking anybody on the path that where the ocean is, it finds. Not trying to find it, still it finds. It goes on moving, moment to moment, living its life. Finally, it reaches the ocean. This moment live well and total. The next moment will come out of this moment, from where else it can come. It will grow out of it by its own. You need not be worried about it. You live this moment in totality, and the next moment is born out of this. If you have lived it totally, then the possibility for the next moment also is born with it. It can also be lived totally. You know how to live totally, you will live the next moment also totally. And every moment more and more total you will become, and the growth will happen on its own. But if you are too much concerned about growth, then you miss this moment. And that is the only time one can grow in. So Lao Tse doesn't talk about growth, because he knows that growth, the very talk about it, will become postponement. Then one thinks, I will grow tomorrow. Today is not time for me. Many other things have to be done. Growth can wait a little. There is no hurry. And then you go on postponing. And you go on living this moment in a fragmentary, partial way. and each moment will come out of it, and with each moment you will become more and more partial, fragmented, divided, split. Then who will grow and how one grows? One has to become that which one is already. One has to attain that which one is born with. You have to become that which is your very being, the very ground of being. So right now is the work. This passing moment has to be used so intensely, absorbed so intensely, it becomes growth. Growth is not an ideal in Tao. It is a byproduct. And about spirituality, Tao does not concern itself at all. If you ask Lao Tse, he will laugh. If you talk about spirituality, he may slap your face. He may throw you out and will say to you, go somewhere else. Don't bring such stupid things to me. Why? Because the moment you say spiritual, you have divided life into the material and the spiritual. And he is far, the total, the whole. The moment you say spiritual, you have condemned something in the material, in the body, in the world. The very word spiritual carries a condemnation in it, a division. You can see people who think they are spiritual. In their eyes you can see condemnation. Don't go very near to them. They are poisonous. In their very breath, there is danger and infection. Escape from them. Whenever you see a spiritual man coming towards you, run as fast as you can. Because he is ill. He is deeply neurotic. He is a schizophrenic. Because he has divided life in two, and life is an undivided whole. It cannot be divided. Life is not soul. Life is not body. Life is both. You are not body and soul. You are body soul. That end is dangerous. Drop it. I have seen people who have dropped the end, but still, when they think of body soul, they cannot make it a one word. A small hyphen instead of the end, the place between the two. Even that hyphen is dangerous. Drop that also. Make body soul one word. It is one. Make matter mind one. Make this world and that world one. Let your God be here down in the matter, and let your matter arise high and enter into your God. Then how can you talk about spirituality? In India, this disease is very old, this disease of spirituality. People come to me, spiritual people, not knowing me rightly sometimes, They come to me by fault. And they talk about their spirituality. And in the same breath, they talk about others' materialism. It is a cliche in India that the West is materialist and the East is spiritual. This is nonsense. This is just a very bigoted, schizophrenic mind. But it arises out of the division between the body and the soul. Then everything will be divided. Then your whole life will always carry a division. Even body is divided into the higher body is something higher, and below the navel, the lower body is really lower. Lower as a valuation. Body and soul are divided, then body is also divided. The lower part is somehow dirty. The higher part is holy, sacred. In fact, where your body has the division inside it, can you demark a place from where the body becomes lower? The blood circulates all over the body. The same blood. The whole body is one network. How can you divide it? And people who divide, tell them then cut your lower body and live with the higher. Then we will see. They will die immediately. That's what happens to spiritual people. They are dead people. This has been my observation, that even materialists are more alive than your spiritual people. Because materialists deep down feel that someday they will try to become spiritualists also. They don't condemn. Rather, on the contrary, they feel a self-condemnation inside them, a guilt, that they are not going to the temple, and they are going to the prostitute, and they are not going to the prayer, and they are going to a singing party, a dancing party. They know that they are doing something wrong. They feel humiliated. There is a possibility. Because the ego feels hurt. But the spiritual person is the egoist person. In fact, God has been, the concept of God has been created by the greatest egoists of the world. To condemn others and to appreciate themselves. God is total. But the God of the so-called spiritual people is not total. Their God is just an abstraction, a thought, a pure thought, with no life in it. Lao Tse is not a spiritual in that sense, and he won't allow any spiritual into his vicinity. He is simply for the whole. He is simply for no division. I am also for no division. When I initiate you in sannyas, I am not initiating you into spirituality. I am initiating you into a life of the whole. I am trying to make you holy, not spiritual. And remember, by holy I always mean the whole, in which you will live integrated life, an integrated, organically integrated life of body, soul, world, God, market and meditation, an integrated life where no division exists, a flowing energy, not compartmentalized. I don't want in your being any airtight compartments. Your being should be liquid. You should be courageous, so courageous that even the sinner can exist side by side with your saint in you, and your saint is not afraid, and your sinner doesn't feel condemned. When your sinner and saint come closer and closer and one day become one, you have become holy. Then you have not denied anything. You are not a no-sayer. You have said yes to the whole life as it is, with no conditions attached. You have said yes to the whole life. This to me is what a religious man is, not a spirituality. And the same is true with Lao Tse. He does not bother about growth. Growth will take its own course. You live the moment. He does not bother about spirituality. You live totally. The spirituality will take its own care. It will come. It is a flowering. It is not a discipline. When one is total, life flowers. And that flowering is spirituality. Spirituality is not an attitude. It is not a discipline. It is an outcome of a life lived totally, joyfully, delightfully, of a life of no complaint, of a life lived courageously, intensely. Then this flowering happens. Fifth question. You spoke of balance, the meeting point, the blending of opposites, but it seems to be an invisible, timeless point. Then how can it be known by me who is time? You are both time and timelessness. Otherwise, it cannot be attained. You have known only part of your being. That part of being is time. If you know your whole being, you know the timelessness. For the whole, there exists no time. Time is a relative concept. It exists only for people who are not whole. This has to be understood. This is a delicate point and very complicated. Time is one of the most abstruse problems. St. Augustine says that I know what time is when nobody asks me. But when somebody asks, I don't know. Everybody knows what time is if nobody asks. If somebody insists, then define, explain what time is, then you are at a loss. You have been using it. Every moment you have been talking about it. And you have a subtle feeling about it, what it is. But when you want to be articulate about it, you are at a loss. Time is one of the most abstruse problems. Try to understand. Time is relative, the first thing to be understood. It is nothing absolute. For the whole universe there is no time, because it cannot move from one point to another, because both the points are in it. It contains all the past, the present, the future. If it doesn't contain the future already, how the future can exist ever? The whole cannot move in time because it contains time also. Time is part of its existence. That's why for the whole we say it lives in eternity. Eternity means timelessness. There is no time in it. Past, future, present, all are implied in it. Time exists for us because we live as parts. Space exists for us because we live as parts. It is a relative phenomenon. For the whole, space doesn't exist because it is contained in the whole. It cannot go anywhere else because there is no anywhere else. The whole space is in it, where it can go. It exists here now. It always exists here now. Otherwise has never been the case. And you are both a part. If you live a divided life, if you live a partial life, if you live half asleep, almost asleep, then you live in time. If you live a fully awakened life, suddenly you live in eternity, timelessness. You have become the whole. Now no time exists for you. One German mystic, Eckhart, was on his dying bed. A disciple, a curious, inquiring man, in fact a student of philosophy, asked him, "Master, I know that you are dying, but one question I would like before you leave the body to be answered. Otherwise it will haunt me for my whole life." Eckhart opened his eyes and said, "What is your question?" The man said, "When you will die, where you will go?" Eckhart said, "There is no need to go anywhere." Closed his eyes and died. "There is no need to go anywhere," he said. I don't think that the man's inquiry was satisfied. But a beautiful answer has been given. It needs very deep understanding. Eckhart said, "There is no need to go anywhere." It means I am everywhere now. Where is the need to go anywhere? Buddha was asked the same question again and again. That when a Buddha dies, where he goes? Buddha always laughed and kept quiet. At the last moment, again the question was raised and Buddha said, "Bring a small candle." The candle was brought and Buddha said, "Light the candle." And the candle was lit. And then Buddha said, "Bring it near to me." The candle was brought nearer and nearer, and then suddenly he blew it off. And he said, "I ask you where this candle light has gone. Where has gone the flame?" The disciples were at a loss. In Sanskrit, the cessation of a flame is called nirvana. So Buddha said, just like this, when Buddha dies, he disappears. He becomes one with the whole. So the point is irrelevant where he goes, because where the whole can go, where this flame has gone, it has become one with the whole. Now it no more exists as an individual flame. The individuality is dropped. That's why the word nirvana became most important in Buddhist terminology. It means cessation of a flame. Total cessation of a flame. It remains, because whatsoever is remains. But you cannot find it. Where you will find a flame which is no more? Individuality is lost, form is lost. Where you will find it? But can you say it is no more? It is, because how can a thing which was can be no more? Disappeared, of course. Became one with the formless, of course. Became one with the whole, of course. But it is. Now it exists as the whole. You have both the possibilities. You can live in time, then you live as mind. Mind is time, because mind divides life into past, present, future. Mind is the dividing factor. Mind is a great analyst, the great dissector. It dissects everything. You can live life through the mind, then you live in time. You can live life directly. You can live life immediately. Without mind, you can put the mind aside. Then you live life timelessly, eternally. Then there is no past. Then there is no future. Then there is only present and present and present. It is always there. Past is that present which you cannot see. And future is that present which you cannot see yet. Past is that present which has passed beyond you, beyond your perception. Future is that present which has not come yet in the boundaries of your perception. Just think of a small example. You are waiting under a long tall tree for someone. You can look at the road, but there is a limitation. You can look one furlong to one side, one furlong to another side, and then the road disappears. Then another man is sitting on the tree, on the top of the tree. He can look farther. He can look 1 mile in one direction, 1 mile in another direction. You are waiting for a friend. The friend appears, not for you, but for the man who is sitting on the top of the tree. The moment the man appears on the road, it has become present to him. But to you, it is still future. He has not yet appeared on the road. Unless he comes within your boundary of perception, he will not be present. He is future. Then past, future and present are relative. It depends where you are, on your height. That's why jainas insist that Mahavir knows all the three tenses of time. Because of his height, he can see end to end. Nothing is hidden from him. So whatsoever you think is past is still present for him. And whatsoever you think is future is present for him. Then the friend appears. You talk to the friend, then he moves again. After one furlong, he disappears for you. He has become past. But for the man on the top of the tree, he is still part of present. It depends how much is the compass of your understanding. If your compass is total, then there is no time. Then you can see end to end. Then everything of the past is also present right now. Then everything that is going to happen in the future is also present right now. Then there is no past, no future, only present persists. Only one moment of present exists. That moment is eternity. You have both the possibilities. You can exist through the mind, then you are limited. It is just like as if you are looking from the window towards the sky, then the frame of the window becomes the frame of the sky. The frame of the mind becomes the frame of your world. Then you come out of the window. You jump out of the window. You come under the whole sky. Now there is no frame. In French painting, a new cult is arising, the cult of paintings without frame. It is a beautiful phenomenon, because all frames are false. In life, everything exists without frame. But when you paint a picture, you put a frame to it. That frame is the most false thing. And the irony is that sometimes people purchase so beautiful and decorative frames that even the picture is not so costly as they put the frame. The frame is more costly and precious. And frame is false. Life exists without a frame. Have you seen life anywhere with frame? But you take a picture, immediately a frame comes into existence. Frame is false. All frames are from the mind. Mind gives frame to everything, which is frameless, formless. You can be both. It depends on you. In deep meditation, when the mind is no more involved, it goes on functioning in the beginning, and by, when you don't listen to it, it stops its chattering, seeing that nobody bothers, seeing that nobody pays any attention. It stops. The mind is just like a child. Have you seen a child? If he falls down, first he looks for his mother, whether she is around somewhere. If she is, then he cries. If she is not, what is the point? Then he simply gets up. It starts playing again because there is no point. Nobody is paying any attention. Nobody will bother unless the mother is there. And sometimes it happens that after half an hour, the mother appears and he starts crying. Now it is absurd, but in a way logical. Because what is the point in crying when the mother is not there? Even if you are hurt, it is pointless. When the mother comes, now the hurt is no more. But it is meaningful to cry and weep for the hurt which is no more. Because the mother is expected to pay attention. The mind is like a child. If you pay attention, it cries. If you pay attention, it creates problems. If you pay attention, it goes on and on. There is no end to it. If you don't pay attention, suddenly the child realizes the mother is no more there. the child by and by realizes the mother is dead. And then the child stops. When the mind stops, you are immediate. Then you face reality directly. Then there is no mediator in between. Nobody to color it. Then the perception is clear, pure, and you are in eternity. The sixth question, can the ego commit suicide? No, because it is not. To commit suicide, it is needed to be there. Let me put it in another way. Can a shadow commit suicide? A shadow cannot commit suicide because a shadow doesn't exist. If you commit suicide, if you cut your head, then the shadow will be without head. It simply follows you. The ego is just a shadow. It cannot commit suicide. If you cut your head, the ego commits suicide. Not that it commits, it happens. Try to understand that ego is not substantial. Ego is just like a shadow. The body moves, a shadow is created, physical shadow. The mind moves, a mental shadow is created. That mental shadow is the ego. When the mind stops, there is no ego. When the mind is not functioning, there is no ego. When the mind is functioning, the ego is there. If the mind functions too much, the ego is too much. That's why you will see people who work with the head too much are more egoist than anybody else. Brahmins, scholars, professors, the so-called intelligentsia, pundits, they have the subtlest egos. Intellectuals, writers, poets, philosophers, they have the subtlest egos. They are nothing but egos. Too much head. People who work with the hands, who are called technically hands, they are humble people. Go and visit a small village, peasants, workers, laborers, who work with the hands, they are humble people. There is a story about a disciple of Confucius. The story is as old as Laozi. Confucius was moving, passing through a village, and he saw an old man, very old man, pulling water from a well and watering his field. It was hard work, and the sun was heart burning, thinking that this man seems has not heard that now there are mechanical devices which can pull the water. You can use horses or bulls instead of men, and easily water can be pulled out. This man seems not to have heard about the devices. So Confucius went to the old man and said, "Have you not heard that now devices exist? The water can be pulled very easily out of the well. And the work that you do in 12 hours can be done within half an hour. Horses can do it. Why you are unnecessary straining too much, and you are such an old man? Must have been 90 years of age." The man said, it is always good to work with the hands, because whenever cunning devices are used, a cunning mind arises. In fact, only a cunning mind uses cunning devices. You don't try to corrupt me. I'm an old man, let me die as innocent as I was born. It is good to work with the hands. One remains humble, said the old man. Confucius came back to his disciples. The disciples asked what you were talking to that old man. Confucius said, it seems he is a disciple of Lao Tse. He hit me hard. And his argument seems to be correct. That when you work with the hands, no shadow arises of the head. A person remains humble, innocent, natural. When you start cunning devices, head comes in. People who work with heads, technically they are called heads, a head clerk, a headmaster, they are called heads. Don't be a head. Even to be a clerk is too bad, and to be a head clerk, finished. To be a master is enough in to be a hell, than to be a headmaster. Try to be hands, and hands are condemned, because they are not cunning, not competitive enough. They seem to be primitive. Try to work more with hands, and you will find less and less the shadow arises. The ego cannot commit suicide because it is not. If you commit a suicide, that is what I call samadhi. That is what I call the final meditation. If you commit suicide, that means if you disappear, you become a nobody. No shadow falls. In old days, it was rumored that whenever a man becomes a Buddha, no shadow falls from his body. This must have been symbolic. It is very meaningful. It doesn't mean that when Buddha walks on the path, no shadow falls. The shadow falls. But inside, no shadow falls. He moves, he works, he does things, but the doer does not arise. That is how the shadow doesn't fall. If needed, he even thinks, but the thinker does not arise. That's how the shadow does not fall. He lives, but he is not a manipulator, the controller. He flows. His life is a spontaneity. He even does not swim. He simply floats with the river. He does not push the river. He simply leaves himself in a let go. He is a let being be. He floats. He leaves it to the river to do everything. Then the shadow doesn't fall. The ego disappears. Don't fight with the ego directly. If you do that, you will fail. Because nobody can fight directly with the shadow. If you have to do something with the shadow, you will have to do something with your being. Something is wrong, a wrong conception. You are a non-being inside. Realize that more and more, the inner hollowness, the emptiness. And suddenly one day you will find the ego has left you. In fact, you will find it has never been there. You were in a misconception. You were in an illusion. It was a mirage. It was not there, it only appeared to be there. It was not a reality, it was a dream. In fact, a nightmare. Seventh question, can a man who lives the states of anger and compassion also live the states of love and hate? Yes. When a man is total, he is total, unconditionally. But his hate has a different quality. His hate is even more loving than your love. And his anger is even more compassionate than your compassion. Because he lives totally, everything takes a new quality to it. Whatsoever he does, it is different. You cannot judge him from your side. Because you don't know what totality means. You know hate. You know love. Sometimes you have loved, you have a glimpse of it. Sometimes you have hated, you had a glimpse of it. But you have never been total. If you are total, your love is different. Your love has the intensity of hate. Have you ever observed the fact that your love has never the intensity of hate? When you hate a person, you really hate. When you love so-so. When you love, you never put yourself into it completely. But when you hate really intensely. Have you watched the fact that your compassion is important? Maybe just a facade, a mask, but your anger is real. All that is wrong seems to be real, and all that is beautiful seems to be false. When a man is total, his love is as intense as his hate. And when a man of totality hates, his hate also carries total love in it. He can hate only because he loves. And he can be angry only because he has compassion. No, it is difficult. It will create a deep confusion in you. Because right now you cannot understand it. Right now your understanding is not ripe for it. You will have to try it. Drop lukewarmness. It needs courage. The greatest courage is needed to live a life of totality. Because then one never knows what is going to happen. And you are always afraid. You love a person, you are afraid to be angry with him or her, because you don't know really whether you love or not. You don't know really whether love will be able to withstand anger. Will it be possible that love will survive anger? So you have to suppress anger because you are afraid. You are not certain really that your love is there. You have a certain feeling. Maybe it is, maybe it is not. A vague feeling. You live in a mist, always surrounded by smoke. Never anything is clear. Perception is always clouded. So you are afraid. This much anger may dissolve the whole relationship, may destroy the whole relationship. No, suppress anger. Then you suppress anger. Anger becomes part of you. When you love, in your love also anger comes in. Watch two lovers making love. You will see that there is violence. The love act is not graceful. Look at the face of the man making love. He seems to be as if he is going to murder the woman. Maybe that's why women always close their eyes while you make love to them. It is better not to see what this man is going to be or going to do. Looks, the whole thing seems to be nasty. Distortion comes to the face. Grace should come. Distortion comes to the face. Faces which look ordinarily beautiful become ugly. As if one is passing through some agony. As if it is not an ecstasy but an agony. Look at the woman's face. The face becomes distorted. All her makeup gone. The face no more seems to be beautiful. And she seems to be in some sort of a pain. Suppressing it. Even while making love, people are afraid that if you move really totally, there is danger point. Their whole mind goes on showing the red light. Stop. Don't go more. Because all that they have suppressed can come up any time. It is there, knocking at their doors. Allow us. So they cannot relax in love also, because relaxation can be only unconditional. There is no conditional relaxation. If you relax, you relax for love also, you relax for anger also, hate also. It is just like when you open the door, you open it for the enemy also, as you open for the friend. If you leave the door open in the night, there is every possibility the friend may come, the enemy also. Then you close the door. But the closed door is closed for both, for the friend and for the enemy both. You have never been able to be angry really, authentically. You cannot love authentically. When you are total, you do everything authentically, never thinking of the consequences. Whatsoever the consequence. This is my mathematics about life. That if you live totally, whatsoever the consequences, it is always good. Whatsoever, it is always good. And if you live a fragmentary life, whatsoever the consequence, it is always bad. And you can see from your lives that you have been living a very gentlemanly life, a lukewarm phenomena, neither cold nor hot. What has happened? Nothing, almost nothing. You have been wasting yourself. Don't waste any more. Be true. There are dangers in being true. Otherwise, everybody would become an authentic man. There are dangers. Otherwise, why so many people will be so unauthentic? Cowards. Afraid. Trying to manipulate somehow a little comfortable life. If you want to live comfortably, then it is better to be a coward. But a comfortable life is nothing but a comfortable death. A real life burns from both the ends. It is a flame, surrounded always by danger, surrounded always by death. When death surrounds you, danger surrounds you, only in that context life comes to its peak. The last question. A bird came to die at your feet some days ago. Can we also, when our time arrives, come and die at your feet? There will be no need to come. I will be there. If you really love me and trust me, I will be there. But don't wait for death. If I am with you in life, only then I can be with you in death. Life is the criterion. Death is the culmination. Whatsoever is in life culminates into a peak in death. It comes to a crescendo. If you feel me in your life, near your heart, then you will find me absolutely present in your death. There will be no need for you to come. I will come. But don't wait for death. It should first happen in life. All that you want to happen in death, you should allow it to happen in life. Because life is the preparation for death. And death is never against life. It is simply the completion of all that has been in life comes to a peak in death. Enough for today.